Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on credit cards when we come back. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property, and public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small businesses today being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level, from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by government agencies like OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot you can do. And the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that you have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, then call and order my free general law CD package and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. And you can call right now and order one. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and give us an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about credit cards. Last time, I was reading you an article here put out by, let's see if I got the name and number here, Internet Scam Busters. And this is a free report. If you go to Scam Busters on the Internet, I don't have an address here for them, but Internet Scam Busters, this is issue number 23, and it's entitled 8 Surefire Strategies that any business owner can use to reduce credit card fraud. Well, I'd covered 3 of them for you yesterday. Those 3 that I covered out of the 8 begin to take a few extra steps to validate each order. Be wary of orders with different bill and ship to addresses. And be especially careful with orders that come from free email services. Now, there's more to it than that, but I was up to number 4. Remember, there are 8 things that you businesses or business owners can do that will reduce, not eliminate. Now, they're not claiming we can eliminate credit card fraud, but you could reduce it by taking these 8 steps. Now, in addition to that, I read to you an article that dealt with 21 ways that credit card thieves, or 28 steps that you can use to protect yourself against identity theft and credit card thieves. And I just made an observation. I said, well, my God. Then there's 21 ways for credit card thieves to steal from you. And you have to know all of those 21 ways that people have to steal from you in order to protect yourself from those 21 methodologies of theft. And I pointed out to you that I don't have any problem with credit card thieves at all. 0. Nobody has stolen my identity, and nobody's going to. How do you like that? And I've never lost a dime to a credit card thief, and I won't lose a dime to any credit card thief. Ain't going to happen to me. Now, it happens to millions of people every year, and it's a nightmare. Well, that's what they tell me. I didn't go through it myself because I didn't want to have the hassle, but they tell me it's a nightmare. It screws up your credit and your credit rating for years. Oftentimes, you get stuck, and I read you a couple of articles here. You know, guy got stung for $14,000. He ended up paying $9,000 of it. And it goes on day in and day out by the millions of cases, and tens of millions of Americans have these credit cards, and they love them. They can't live without them. I mean, a credit card is about as necessary as teeth, you know. I mean, I guess you could live without teeth, but it would be extremely difficult. And so most people that have credit cards, you know, value their credit cards, you know, like they do their right hand. Now, number four, you know, if you're a businessman, here's number four. To protect yourself, be especially wary of orders that are larger than your typical order amount and orders with next day delivery. Crooks don't care what it costs since they are never planning to pay for it anyway. Number five, pay extra attention to international orders. Do everything you can to validate the order before you ship your product to a different country. We won't ship international orders which have different bill to and different ship to addresses. If you're suspicious, pick up the telephone, number six, and call the customer to confirm the order. Believe us, it'll save you a lot of time and money in the long run. Number seven, consider using software or services to fight credit card fraud online. We haven't tried any of these services. However, we have heard positive reviews from colleagues who have used CyberSource. That's www.cybersource.com and Clear Commerce Corporation, www.clearcommerce.com. And if you as a merchant do have the misfortune of being scammed by a credit card thief, you should contact your merchant processor immediately and inform them of the situation. In our case, our merchant provider was able to give us the name and number of the cardholder's bank, and we were then able to contact the cardholder and inform them that their card number had been stolen. And many people aren't even aware that their account number has been stolen. You should also want to contact your bank and the authorities as well. And as we mentioned, the authorities will probably take a report, but may not do much else because, depending upon the dollar amount of the fraud, government doesn't get very excited about credit card theft. Well, there you are. There's eight things that you as a merchant can do. Now, let's see how many we got here. We got 21 plus 8. Now, according to my reckoning, that's about 29 things that you have to know to protect yourself from credit card thieves. Now, 30 years ago, I never heard much about credit card theft or having a problem. And then one day, I don't know, maybe it was 30 years ago, I read a story and somebody said that somebody had taken their number and they were out stealing, you know, by using the number and the expiration date. It was a rare event. Today, it's as common as pig tracks in a barnyard. And people are really concerned about this thing of identity theft, and it's leading to national identification cards, and it's leading to the mark of the beast, and it's leading to a chip in your right hand. Because credit cards are so pervasive in our society, that is here in the United States. I can't speak for the rest of you people out there in the world, but here in the United States, I reported to you last time, I talked to a guy in a service station, just a gas station. And he said to me that 93% of his transactions are done in credit cards or check. Only 7% now of the transactions on a daily basis are done in cash. That's a big change here in America. When I was a kid, there weren't any credit cards. I mean, I guess there were credit cards out there, but common people didn't have them. I don't know when the first credit card came along. I imagine it was back in the 20s or 30s, but only rich people had credit cards. When I was a kid, the first time that I saw a credit card was when Bank of America sent me a credit card about 1958. I had an account at the bank. I mean, I used to be normal. I used to have credit cards. I used to have checking accounts and bank accounts and connections with banks. But, you know, those banks, which used to charge 6% interest, and they used to tell us, you know, that if anybody charged you more than 6% interest, it was usury. And the only people that we knew of that charged usury were loan sharks, and they charged more than 6%, or the mafia. And, of course, you know, common people didn't deal with the mafia and loan sharks, and so it wasn't a problem to us ordinary people. But we had heard about that. You know, it's kind of like sodomites. You know, we'd heard about queers, but we never saw one. We didn't know what it looked like. We kind of laughed, and we heard these stories, you know, but nobody down at the lower level, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago had ever actually come into contact with one. Credit cards were the same way. Yeah, we heard about credit cards, but, you know, nobody, we heard about checking accounts, but that was just for companies and businesses had those. Now, today, everybody has a checking account and everybody complains about them. And the banks, you know, they take unconscionable liberty with the business methodologies that they now employ. It's very common, for instance, when you have a credit card, that they'll give you a free credit card. They'll advertise, you know, come on, you know, called bait and switch, you know, is what we call it in the trade. But they'll offer you a credit card with no interest. And so you sign up and you say, well, yeah, I'll take one of those. So you get one and you use it and you run up $1,000. And then one day you're late on your payments. And so then they start charging you interest, you know, sometimes after 6 months or a year anyway. But now that you're late, you know, they start charging you interest on it. And then they count on the fact that you're going to use lust and greed and that you're going to run this bill up on this credit card and then not be able to pay it. And then they can ding you with the interest. And credit card companies are never out of dime. I mean, you could take your credit card, run up a $10,000 bill, and then you can declare bankruptcy, bankrupt out of that $10,000, and the bank never lost a quarter on the entire transaction. The economy does. Inflation does. You know, there's a price that we all pay for that, but the credit card company doesn't lose a dime, and I don't think the average American understands how this deal is made. But the bank, you see, extends credit. They're not putting out any dollars. You see, you and I, we have to go out and work, and we produce goods and services, and at the end of the week, we get paid our paycheck, and we deposit our paycheck in the bank, and if somebody were to steal that from us, we would have an actual loss of our labor. Banks, they don't have any risk whatsoever. Zero. Zero risk. Here's the way that works. They have a license issued by government to issue credit cards, issue credit. And so they send you an application and they say, well, would you like to have some credit? And you say, well, yes, I would. And you mail in the application. This is a contract which is legally binding. Now, once you've signed this contract with the bank can come out and take your house. They can take your lien on your paycheck. They can do all kinds of things to collect the money that you borrow from them. And it's denominated in dollars. But you see, the bank, they never worked in, not a minute. They never put up any money at all. They just issued the credit. And you went out and spent it. It's like creating money right out of thin air. And that's the way they do that. That's why you have inflation. And so when you borrow $10,000 from them, you run your credit card out and you max it out at $10,000, let's say, and you pay 15% interest on a $10,000 installment note or a credit card note. Just take $10,000 here times 0.15, and that's $1,500 a year. So the credit card company, when you actually pay them, they make $1,500 interest on this $10,000. Now, they didn't make the whole $10,000. I mean, they didn't rake in $10,000 because they had to give that back to the merchant. So you go down and you buy a big screen TV for $2,000. The bank doesn't make a dime on that $2,000. They make the interest if you make payments on it. But the bank, you know, wouldn't make a dime on this transaction. Well, I shouldn't say don't make a dime, because they charge the merchant 5%. The merchant, in turn, he passes that 5% on to you. So you're actually paying it all. So this $2,000 transaction over here, actually $100 of that transaction goes to the credit card company. That's the transaction fee. And then the $1,500 they get off of the 15% interest. And then if you don't pay that credit card on time and they bump your interest from 15 to 27 or 30, 32% or something like that, you know, costs you even more. But the bank is never on the hook for any of the losses that you see going on over here. That's not their problem in life. Now, if you go down and you pull a gun on a bank teller and you rob the bank of $1,500, which is the average, by the way. You know, the average bank robber gets $1,500 when he robs a bank, because that's all the money the teller's got. You can go to jail for 20 years. But you can go out here and you can steal $1,500 or $15,000 or $150,000 or $500,000 on a credit card. And like as not, you won't even get caught. Like as not, if you do get caught, it's called white collar crime. And maybe you'll go to jail for 5 years or something like that, but you're not going to go to jail for 20 years for robbing a bank. And so this is a whole lot better program for thieves than actually going into the bank and robbing it. And people get real excited about bank robbers. You ever notice that? When somebody goes in and robs a bank, you know, it's on the 6 o'clock news and they're looking for this suspect and they got his picture posted all over and people, you know, oh my God, this is a dirty bank robber. Now the same bank down here charging usury to people at the rate of 15%. Now this, remember, I told you here, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, 6% interest was the limit. Anybody that charged over 6% was a usurer. And now banks routinely charge 15 to 30% interest. And I don't see anybody getting excited about that or getting angry at banks and financial institutions for practicing usury. But boy, do they get excited about the bank being robbed. Jesse James comes in, robs the bank. Well, that really makes people angry. Well, I guess it's a part and parcel of our civilization, a part and parcel of our times that we're living in. Now, I got to share with you a little bit here on this thing of usury. I guess at this juncture of time, we ought to talk a little bit about usury. Did you know that paying interest on your credit card is a crime? I just thought I'd throw that out there to you. It's against the law to pay usury. Did you know that? Primarily, it's against the law to charge interest or usury. How much interest constitutes usury? And the answer is, if I charged you 0.1%, not just 1%, but if I just charged you 0.1% interest, I'd be in violation of the usury statutes in the scripture. Do you know that? And so years ago, not at Mount Sinai, Moses gave us a system of laws. There were 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments that we got from Moses. And then those 759 statutes, some of them are repeated more than once. When you boil it down and synthesize it, there's 133 separate individual laws. There's actually not very much to biblical law. And keep in mind that the creator of the universe, this is God now, this real weird God, this different God, this odd God, he runs the entire universe on these 133 statutes, judgments, and commandments. Now, I'm sitting in my office and I'm looking over here at the United States Code, and there's 88 volumes to the U.S. Code. Just looking up here on the wall, 88 volumes. And then there's 14 volumes that deal just with constitutional law. That's an addendum that goes up to it. And then there's an index down here at the bottom. It's got another 20 or 30 volumes in it. And that's your United States Code. And Title 18 is the criminal code. And in Title 18, they got, you know, laws in there that say, thou shalt not steal. And there's volumes and volumes and volumes about that. And Title 26 deals with income tax. And then there's volumes and volumes and volumes that deal with the income tax. And so God, when it comes to a Title 18, thou shalt not steal, he's just got four words, thou shalt not steal. Four words. And God can say more in four words than the United States Congress can say in 10 volumes in the U.S. Code. Did you know that? So he doesn't say very much. It doesn't take very much space to put in thou shalt not steal. The entire constitution of the universe, the entire constitution of planet Earth, the entire constitution of the Hebrew people is contained in 10 commandments. I suppose there's less than 200 words in the 10 commandments. Now compare that with the Constitution of the United States, or the Bill of Rights, or the Patriot Act, or Homeland Security Act. I mean, that Patriot Act had 1,300 pages to it. So when men codify laws, they codify commerce, is what they're really doing. And if you take a look at the statutes here in the Bible, you don't find any statutes coming out of Congress that say, thou shalt not commit adultery. There's no moral laws that come out of Congress. They're all economic laws. Those are laws that deal with credit cards or banks or with trade, commerce, business, and industry. In fact, that's where the money's at. And so I've reported on that a number of times that, you know, if you want to know what the law is and how this thing is going to come down, follow the money, as old Dan Rather used to say. And you read the statutes and you'll find that there's a monetary interest in each and every one of the statutes in the U.S. Code. Same thing is true with your state codes. And it comes under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8. Congress really isn't interested in moral laws. Now, once in a while, the state legislatures will come up with a moral law. For instance, a Megan's Law, or a requirement that the pedophiles report or register. When there was a little girl, and I guess her name was Megan, it's called Megan's Law, was kidnapped and murdered, her parents went to the legislature and said, "Hey, we got to have a law here." As if somebody had neglected to make a law. I don't know if you knew this, but in Leviticus chapter 18, there is a system of laws that, you know, you people call it Megan's Law. But God had a legal system over here. It deals with pedophiles. Did you know that? God, the Creator God. Now, I'm not talking about sweet Jesus or Allah or Buddha or anybody like that, but I was talking about the Creator, you know, the guy that came down on Mount Sinai. You know, the guy that talked with Moses. He had an idea about pedophiles. He thought they all ought to be killed. Dead. So if you got some guy that's over here having sexual relations, you know, with underage girls, and or you've got some father or stepfather or something like that that's having sexual relations, you know, with his children or something like that, there's a very easy, simple solution to take him out and stone him to death in a big public ceremony. Now, of course, today, we don't do that. You can have one-third of the clergy in Boston, you know, one-third of the Catholic Church. This is what they admit to now. This isn't something that I just dreamed up yesterday. After this big scandal with the Catholic Church and pedophiles and so on, the Catholic Church said, well, up in Boston, they've got one-third of their clergy that are pedophiles or sodomites, or both. They might be doing both, but they're one or the other. That's one out of every three. Now, under the law of God, you can eliminate all that. You take all the sodomites and all the pedophiles, and you take them out and stone them. And if the Catholic Church practiced what God told them to, there wouldn't be any pedophiles in Boston. Well, not in the church, anyway. Because you'd have taken all those priests out, and you would have killed them all. And then that would solve and that would end that problem over there. But human beings, being what we are, we have to fix God's mistakes. Now, obviously, that's not very kind, and it's not very gentle. And the point I'm making is that our legislatures are not in the business of making moral laws. They're in the business of making economic laws. Once in a while, when people really get uptight, and they really get mad. They'll go to the legislature and say, well, we need a law, and we need the legislature to pass a law to make these pedophiles register. Now, I don't understand why you'd want to register a pedophile. It's like registering one of these pit bulls. Who in the hell would want a pit bull? Dogs that kill people. Now, when was the last time a cocker spaniel attacked a kid and killed him? See? And people, you know, they've got to have the meanest, nastiest dog God ever put breath into. And I'm not sure God ever created a dog like that, but then maybe there are some wild, you know, wolves and coyotes and one thing and another. And then somebody bred them out, and they came up with some pretty mean-looking dogs and mean dogs. And they came up with dogs like German shepherds, you know. I mean, they use these dogs, you know, to attack people and one thing and another. And I always thought about that. I got a big dog out here. He's called a Great Pyrenees, and he's just as gentle as he can be. Well, he probably weighs 150 pounds, but I don't think that he'd bite you. He barks, you know. He's a good watchdog, but he wouldn't harm anybody. And I kind of like a dog like that because he's harmless, but he warns me, tells me when you come. When I hear him barking out there, I say, well, somebody's coming. He lets me know ahead of time that you're coming down the road, coming down the lane. And for some reason, people have it in their minds that they've got to fix all these mistakes that God makes. And so God makes a lot of these mistakes. And so we came up with this Megan's Law over here to make these pedophiles sign up over here, you know, so that we know that this pedophile over here is living next door to us or down the street or something like that. And I'm sitting here saying, why would you want to live on the same block with a pedophile? Why would you want to live on the same block with a guy that's got a pit bull? Why would you want to live on the same block with some guy that's got two cobras in a cage someplace? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. But, you know, people are people, and they want to live, you know, with exotic animals, and they want to live with pedophiles and sodomites and so on. And then, of course, when it comes back and it bites them, you know. Now, they don't want to live on the same street with a bank robber or a druggie. So we lock drug addicts or we lock drug people, you know, up in jail. And doctors now, they kill 130,000 people a year. We don't lock them up. Not entirely clear why, but we don't lock doctors up, and they kill 130,000. Now, illegal drug pushers down here, they kill 6,000 people a year, and God, we just fill our jails up with those guys. I mean, if you're out here selling heroin or cocaine, we're going to lock you up. But if you're a doctor and you're selling the same drugs under a different brand name from Pfizer, and you're out here killing, I don't know, 20 times as many people, yeah, that's fine. That's okay by us. It's okay to be a pedophile in America as long as you're registered. Or a priest, you know, one or the other. We don't have any problems with that. Well, now, when we talk about credit and credit cards over here and theft, if you're robbing a bank and you're a bank robber, we want to lock you up. But if you're a banker and you're robbing people by charging them 15 to 30% interest and you're a usurer, that's okay by us. Hell, we'll give you the front row in the church. I mean, you can sit up in the front seats in church if you're a banker, a lawyer, or a preacher. We don't have any problems with that, but boy, do we have problems real problems, you know, with bank robbers, you know, the kind of thieves that go out here and rob a bank. Now, Jesse James probably wouldn't make it very well in our society today. Well, anyway, I thought I'd share with you a couple of thoughts here on this thing called the usury statutes. Did you know that usury is very, very profitable? It makes a lot of money. And Americans are real concerned about constant dollars. And so today you're making more money than you've ever made in your lives. And Americans are happy and contented. I mean, the average American worker today is happy and contented. We have now exported more than 2 million jobs from America. 2 million jobs. Jobs that paid $20 or $30 an hour routinely now transported or offshored now to India, China, the Philippines, Indonesia, and Pakistan, and other places. And Americans don't seem to be very excited about that. And I certainly don't want to get people excited over something they don't want to get excited about, but it would seem like to me that that's not a very good policy to export jobs from the United States. Well, let's think about it for a minute. Just figure out how much money you made. And I made this report to you the other day. The average person, that is 50% of the world's population, lives on $2 or less, and 50% of the world's population lives on $2 or more. Did you know that? Half the people in the world live on $2 or less, and half the people in the world live on $2 or more. If you have $2,200, you would be wealthy on planet Earth. Remember that? I gave you that report here the other day. And if you've got $500,000, if you're an American or a Canadian or a British citizen or somebody, and you've got a house, and not everybody has a $500,000 house. Now, I'm not saying, you know, that you're all filthy rich, but if you've got $500,000 in assets, you're in the top 1% of the world's population. Now, here in America, we have what's called the median average income. Median average. This median average is pushing 50,000 now. I think it's 48,500 or something like that, but it's right at 50. 6 years ago, in the year 2000, it was at 40,000 or 41. And just a few years before that, it was at 35. So about 1995 to 2000, it was about 35,000. About 2000, it jumped up to about 40 or 41,000. Today, it's up around 50,000, called the median average. That's half the people in America earn $50,000 or less, and half the people of America own earn 50,000 or more, called the median average. Now, that's a pretty important number. Pretty important number, because Americans operate on the theory of they're making more money than they ever made in their lives, but they haven't had a real pay increase or an increase in their standard of living since 1973. So stand by, and when we come back, I'm going to explain that. So don't go away. Let me remind you, though, that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement only. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. Again, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. And a final reminder, we're offering a new class on health and healing, which covers the alternative methods being used for the treatment and healing of cancer, which I call the botch of Egypt. It's a disease, by the way, that now affects about 50% of Americans, one out of two. And we'll be talking about how to prevent these degenerative diseases, abdominal fat and so on, and the use of and application of essential oils, super nutritional foods containing more nutrients and fewer calories. Now, the class also includes hands-on teaching, paperwork, allergic reaction testing and training so that you can do it at home, acupressure application and training so you can find the pressure points and much, much more to contribute to your ongoing health. This class will be coming up on February the 5th through the 9th here in Isabella, here at the law school. If you're interested, then call us here at the law school. Call my wife, Jackie. The number is 417-273-4967. Oftentimes get calls, you know, on health issues here at the law school. We cover health quite often, and people want to know, well, what do I do about this? Well, my wife is a 28-year cancer survivor, and she's pretty knowledgeable about the 10 cures to cancer. That's your number one health problem or health concern that most people have, cancer. All right, we're talking about credit cards and credit card theft and credit card fraud. And so I thought I'd share with you a couple of thoughts here about this thing of money. Oftentimes, people, they get very vehement about Jews. Oh, God, they hate Jews. And when you get down to it and you say, well, what is it about these Jews that you really hate the most? And he said, well, they're all thieves. I didn't know that, but every once in a while, thieves. How do you mean? What are they stealing? Are they robbing banks? Are they stealing cars? What is it? No, it's their business practices. All these bankers are Jews, and all these credit cards, all this usury and interest, it's all caused by these Jews. I'm thinking about that a little bit, and I said, well, wait a minute. Do these Jewish bankers, do these Jews, do they go around with guns and stick them in your face and say, here, sign up for this credit card? Do these Jews run out on the streets and capture people and bring them in at gunpoint and make them open checking accounts or something? No, they don't do any of that. Okay. The other day I saw an ad here for a car title loan. Here in our state, we have what we call car title loans. I was in Springfield the other day, and I went by about three or four, you know, big gaudy stores. It used to be that they, you know, like one of these fencing operations here, you know. They got yellow buildings, and they're just really gaudy, and they got yellow and red signs. They're advertising these car title loans, and the interest rate is 9.9% a month. I don't know if these people are Jews that own these businesses over here, pawn shops, you know. They're usually painted yellow with red signs, and I don't know. Maybe they are. I don't have any complaints about pawn shops or car title loan companies and banks and so on. I mean, they're criminal activities, and they're illegal and unlawful when we look at it through the eyes of the Scripture, through the eyes of the Creator of the universe. They're criminal activities, but nobody's forcing you or me or anybody else to go in here and do business with them. You know, we do that voluntarily. And I don't have a credit card, not a single credit card. I used to. I had a lot of credit cards. And then I got burned on those credit cards over there, but I never got mad at the Jews because of credit cards. And I used to have a checking account, and I used to do business with banks, but I never got mad at Jews because they own the banks or something. I woke up one day, though, and I said, you know, this isn't good for me. This isn't making me any money, so I think I'll quit doing it in my own self-interest. It's kind of like smoking. I'm not opposed to Liggett and Myers and the tobacco companies. I mean, I was just as impressed when I was 12, 13, 14 years old with Camel cigarettes as young people are today, and I started smoking. I smoked for about 9 years. I woke up one day and I said, you know, the smoking isn't good for me, so I think I better quit, and I did. And I think that people should have a right to make choices for themselves. I never noticed that God came down and got real excited about smoking. I haven't noticed that the creator of the universe has come around and got real excited, you know, about pit bulls or banks or title loan companies or some of these other problems, you know, that we have in our society or perceived problems. I'm not quite sure that they're real problems. But people, you know, they get real mad about a pedophile being registered in the local network, but they don't get very excited about the bank down here that's charging them 30% interest on their credit card. So I thought I'd start off here by explaining to you what geometric progression is. Americans go to public school and we pride ourselves, and I guess we try to impress the rest of the world, on the fact that we Americans have universal education. We force people against their will and over their objection to go to school. We want educated people. We want people to know something. I'm not quite sure what it is you're supposed to know, but whatever it is, we're real serious about you knowing it, whatever it is you're supposed to know. But I've noticed that people can't count. Now, and the people that can't count are the people that have more letters after their names. I run across more people that don't have letters after their names that can count than people who do have letters after their name and count. I got to tell you a story, and I'm going to relate this to a guy that I know, and I'm not going to name any names or point any fingers or anybody, but a guy that I know, very, very nice guy, a hell of a nice guy, got a nice wife and nice kids and you know. He had a house that he wanted to buy, and so he bought this house down here in the Ozarks, and one day he woke up and he said, "Well, I've had it with this Ozarks thing. I'm going back to the city." So he wanted to sell this house. So when he sold the house, he sold this house to a lady, and she said, "Well, do you want to be paid in gold?" And he said, no, I do not want gold. I want real money. I want Federal Reserve notes." And so a deal was struck up, and in this deal, the person involved here who wanted paper money, wanted Federal Reserve note, United States currency, you know, the deal was made. And so we'll just pick a number. You don't have to be any real number. Let's just pick a number. And it was $60,000. At the time the deal was made, the price of gold was about $600 an ounce. So now if you're an average Joe Sixpack, or you're maybe a doctor, a dentist, or maybe you're a lawyer or somebody, and you've got degrees and you've got letters after your names and you're a real smart guy, and you're making $100,000 or $200,000 a year, listen up now, because I'm going to explain this. Because this guy's got a degree. I mean, this guy's got letters after his name. And this lady that's involved doesn't have any letters after him. But this lady, though, that I'm telling you about can count. This lady, she's a hillbilly now, but she's a real smart hillbilly. She went to school, and she can read real good, and she can count. She can count real good. She doesn't even use her fingers when she counts. I mean, this is really a smart girl. And so this deal was made, and this lady said, "Okay, well, if you don't want gold for this house, then I will pay you in Federal Reserve notes." Now she said, "How much time can I have to pay for this house?" And he said, "Well, I don't know." Now I got to tell you that this lady said, "Well, if I'm going to buy this house from you, I have to pay you over the next 7 years. I can't buy this house for 10, 15, 20, or 30 years. I've got to budget this house so that I pay you within 7 years, because this lady practices the law of the scripture. She practices the year of release and the usury laws. And she said to this person, she says, "Now, I'm not going to pay you any interest on this house. And I'm going to pay you over the next 6 years." So she gave him a down payment in Fed notes. Just here. Here's $5,000 in cash. And then she said, "Well, now I'm going to sign a contract with you for 6 years. Can you write that down? $5,000 down. And she's going to pay $10,000 a year for 6 years in Federal Reserve note dollars. Now, she offered this guy gold. He said, no, I don't want any gold. Do not want gold. I want real money. I run into that every once in a while. People will tell me, you know, when I offer or I ask them, it's really an offer, but oftentimes I ask them, I say, well, do you want to get paid in real money, or did you want to get paid in paper? Do you want a check? Do you want a cashier's check? They always want real money. They want United States currency. They want United States dollars. And so I avoid United States dollars. Listen, I avoid Federal Reserve notes like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I use them, you know, every once in a while, you know, out of necessity, but I don't denominate my business in them, and I don't price my product in them or anything like that. Of course, I don't use Russian rubles, and I don't use Indian rupees and the Chinese yuan either. But anyway, the deal was struck, and this lady, now she's practicing the law, and this guy's kind of practicing the law too, but he's not practicing quite all of the law, because instead of dealing in just weights and balances, which we see in Leviticus 19, 35, and 36. I mean, the God, the creator of the universe, he said he didn't want us dealing in paper. I don't know if you are aware of that. But this paper money idea that came along, you know, with the Federal Reserve, it violates thou shalt not steal, and it violates Leviticus 19, 35, and 36, and Deuteronomy 25, 13 through 16, that prohibits dealing in just weights and balances. Now, these two people are in compliance with the usury laws. They're not practicing interest and usury. But this man said, I don't want to be paid in gold. He was offered gold. Now, that happens once in a while. In fact, it happens very commonly. And I know if you're a businessman, you're sitting out there, what in the hell am I going to do with gold anyway? I have people tell me, what in the hell am I going to do with gold? Well, just because you don't know what to do with it doesn't mean that it's bad stuff. I mean, I suppose I could come along and offer you a Volkswagen. You say, what in the hell am I going to do with a Volkswagen? Well, you could drive it. You could use it for transportation. You could use it for a flower pot, you know, if you wanted to. You could plant flowers in it, and you could put ivy in there and have it grow up all over. You could use it as a planter in your front yard, you know, all kinds of uses for the thing. But most people just drive them from here to there, use them for transportation, you know. But so this lady, now at the time this transaction was made, gold was selling for about $600 an ounce. And so she took 100 ounces of gold and she put it in a coffee can. Now, this lady, when she bought this house from this guy, she intends to make a profit on this house. Did you know that? This lady, you know, that can read and write and count real good without her fingers, a hillbilly lady with no college degree, took 100 ounces of gold. Now, she put the 100 ounces of gold into a coffee can, and she put the coffee can up on a shelf. And at the end of the first year, she went over to the coffee can. And she took out some of those gold coins, and she went down to the coin store, to the gold broker, and she traded in some of those coins. And then she got Federal Reserve notes, and she sent the $10,000 payment to this guy. So. Now, you know, a lot of you people are sitting there, he's going, well, this woman's really stupid. I mean, she's not very sophisticated. And here she is. She's practicing the year of release. She's practicing the Mosaic Law. She's not paying usury and interest. She's dealing in gold coin. And she's intending to make a profit. Now, how does this woman intend to make a profit? Okay. Well, let me explain this to you. Now, the value of the dollar is going down. Did you know that? It hit a peak about 1999 or 2000. And on what we call the dollar index, when you compare the value or the purchasing power of the United States dollar with that of the euro or with rupees or with any other currency, you'll find that different currencies have different values. And so you take a look at the Canadian dollar and you look at prices, and oftentimes you'll see a book and it says it's 1995 for this book. in Canada, they'll have another number on there, and it'll say they want $32 for it in Canada. I got a book just the other day. It had that mark on it. It said 1995 or 2295 or something, but $32 in Canadian dollars. And what that's telling you is that the Canadian dollar is cheaper than the American dollar. It takes more Canadian dollars to buy that book than it does American dollars to buy that book. Okay, now if it was priced in euros, if you saw a number on that book priced in euros, it wouldn't be 1995. It would be about 13 euros. And that's because the euro is worth about one-third more, well, about 25% more. I think it's priced at 127. Is that what I saw the other day? About 25% more than the dollar. So it would take 25% less euros to buy that. Now, the reason I mention this to you is because the dollar, which used to be the king of all currencies, has been in trouble now for a number of years, and the dollar is about to collapse. And when I use the word collapse, I guess I should use that advisedly. It's not going to go out of existence. We're going to continue using the dollar, but it's going to be worth a lot less compared to other currencies. And so the dollar, which is now at about 80, was up to 120. So if it was at 120 and it has lost 40 points, then that means it's lost about one-third of its value. Okay. Now, in the year 2000, let's suppose you were making $1,000 a month. The purchasing power of the American dollar over the 6 years of the Bush administration, not that this is necessarily George Bush's problem or fault, but over that six-year period, while George has been in office, the dollar has lost about one-third of its purchasing power. So now, you would need $1,333 a month to buy as much as $1,000 bought in the year 2000. Can you follow that? All right. Now, that being the case, the dollar has lost one-third of its purchasing power, and it's projected that it's going to lose one-third more of its purchasing power, or about 50%. Looking at it at 80, it's going to drop to 40. And so this lady, this hillbilly lady, with that information between her ears, says to herself, these U.S. dollars are getting cheaper and cheaper, and at the same time, the price of gold from the year 2000 until today has doubled in price. So this hillbilly lady figured that if the price of gold went from $300 to $600, while the dollar was going from 120 to 80, that the price of gold will probably go from $600 to $1,200, while the dollar goes from 80 to 40. Can you follow that? I'm going to repeat that one more time for you because, you know, you probably having a little trouble catching on to that. And this is why people hate Jews, because Jews can count. That's the reason that people hate them. And these Jews run banks and they sell you credit cards. But all these Jews can count. They can do arithmetic. They don't go to public school, by the way. Jews avoid public school. And 70% of all Jews have college degrees, and most of them have economics. And I don't know why Jews waste their time going to college. There isn't anything in college for a Jew to learn. He already learned that from Uncle Harry. You know, Uncle Harry and his daddy already showed him how to buy, sell, and trade. Well, this hillbilly lady, she's not Jewish, by the way, not Jewish. This hillbilly lady, just using the same economic formula, which is fairly simple, if the dollar lost a third of its purchasing power over 6 years, and the dollar is projected to lose another third of its purchasing power over the next X number of years, we don't know how long, but, you know, let's just say it's the next 6 years, over the life of this contract, she's going to pay out one half of the 100 ounces of gold to this guy as she converts that into more and more cheaper and cheaper paper dollars. And this lady is projecting that her profit margin is going to be 50%. Can you figure that out? This lady, when she made this contract now, she's planning on making a $50,000 profit, or a 50 ounce of gold profit is what she's really looking for, rather than dollars. And that's because these dollars, these Federal Reserve note paper dollars, are constantly changing in value, and that's the problem with them. And that's why God, through Moses, told us not to use unjust weights and balances, because it works a theft on people. That's why he told us not to deal in usury and interest, because it works a theft on people. And he gave us a law that says, thou shalt not steal. Now, you get real angry and you get real mad at people that make profit and gain. Now, the people that get mad at people that make profit and gain are called communists. Communists. Communists do not believe in, nor do they practice, private property or private property rights. They practice communism. They practice from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. They practice that first plank to the Communist Manifesto, which says that they should abolish all rights to private property, especially in land. Now, in the Bible, we find that land is the basis of wealth, and that all wealth comes out of the ground, and that property needs to be protected. Okay? And that to do that, you have to have just weights and balances. You have to have a medium of exchange that doesn't change in value, that doesn't work a theft on people. And credit cards work a theft on everybody. The bank is stealing from you from interest, and the thieves are stealing from you by identity theft. In fact, I've shown you already that there are 21 ways to steal from you from the use of credit cards. I can steal from your credit card account in 21 different ways, and you have to know what all 21 of those ways are, or some credit card thief is going to get to you. And if you're a merchant, there's 8 ways for me to steal from you. And that's in addition to the bank that's already stealing 5% from you when you sign up with them. Now, come on, kids. There ought to be a better way for us to do business than with credit cards. But now, if you're convinced that credit cards are the only way to do business, don't get mad at the Jews, and don't get mad at this hillbilly lady over here for taking advantage of your ignorance. You've been to college, you've got degrees after your name, but you can't count. So let's see this week if we can learn how to count. I'm going to show you how to do percentages and how geometric progression and interest work side by side to rob you. And if you practice usury and interest, you're being robbed. And if you practice theft, you're going to end up poor. So I think there's a better way. Let's practice thou shalt not steal. All right, I'm about out of time, so I'm going to have to wrap it up right about here and remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Here, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.